And now, another edition of the Political Junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
This week, the brand who brought us Macaca faces another setback. Republican Senator George Allen is hit with allegations that he made racist comments during his college years. We play catch-up on some of the close races for the U.S. Senate, plus a conversation with Congresswoman Katherine Harris. It's your chance to talk to political junkie Ken Rudin. What race are you following? What political stories caught your attention this week? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And Ken Rudin is with us now in Studio 3A. He's NPR's political editor. He also writes the weekly column Political Junkie and a podcast called It's All Politics. You know, you have almost as many titles as Jeffrey Nunberg has in that title of his book.
And yet, in many ways, I'm very lonely. Oh, never mind. Oh, sorry.
And I should just explain that I was laughing because the Dean scream cracks me up every time I hear it.
Well, except every time we do it, I always get emails from people say, enough about that, that Howard Dean should be known for more things than the scream, but we still do it, don't we?
You do. Okay, Ken, on a serious note, let's begin with Senator Allen. It is a serious allegation. So describe the allegations for us. Do we know why they surface now?
Well, it's almost like the swift boating of John Kerry and the fact that this is things that happened 30 years ago that just so happened is coming out 6 weeks or less than 6 weeks before a key election. You know, George Allen is suddenly finding himself in a tough fight for a second term for the Senate, which looked like once upon a time as a cakewalk to the 2008 presidential nomination. This was going to be an easy slam dunk for Allen. But first it started with the M word, and that was Macaca. Then became the J word when he suddenly found out he was Jewish, and his mother being born in Tunisia. If my memory serves, he would be the first Jewish African-American president in history, if you know that happened. And now, of course, it's the N-word that has come up. Salon magazine has come up with some people who played football with George Allen 30 years ago who said he repeatedly used the N-word.
And why do they say they're bringing this out now?
Well,
the complainants or the persons with the information.
Well, one of the persons who came forward said that he knows that George Allen is considered a possible presidential candidate in 2008, and he just, you know, wanted to come forward. But 17 out of the 20 or so players on the football team all either said they never heard him say anything racially disparaging at all, or they just think it's not true. So, again, there's a swift boat angle to it because it's one word against the other. Certainly, George Allen denies saying it, but there is a public perception of George Allen being certainly a good old boy from the South, having worn a Confederate flag pin on his high school graduation. And so there are some people who say, well, maybe it is true. And again, that has tightened his race for the Senate against Jim Webb, who until now was really not much of a factor in the Senate race.
Okay, just one last question briefly on Allen, because we have a special guest. We want to make sure she has plenty of time. But it's not all people asking him tough questions or people raising things about Allen that's giving him trouble. He's done some things to hurt himself.
Oh, no,
campaign.
This is all coming out of his own mouth. The Macaca line came from his own voice, you know, when a person of color appeared at a campaign rally. I mean, it almost seemed like, well, it seemed like he was just singling him out because of his color by saying, welcome to Virginia, welcome to America. People said that this is a little ugly. And when he when they brought up the fact that he may have been raised Jewish, his mother was raised Jewish, I mean, his line was something like, well, I still eat ham sandwiches. And it was kind of an awkward, uncomfortable moment for even his supporters and people wondering about his temperament and his maturity for 2008.
Okay. And stay with us, Ken. We have more to talk about. But from time to time, we check in on interesting races around the country. Today, we go to Florida. Republican Congresswoman Katherine Harris has led a rocky campaign to unseat Democrat Bill Nelson for the U.S. Senate. She's behind in the polls. Congresswoman Katherine Harris joins us now by phone from the Washington area. Thank you for coming in. I'm sorry, you're not actually here, but thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you for having me.
And I should mention, we also invited Senator Bill Nelson to join this discussion, but he wasn't available. And as I mentioned earlier, Congresswoman, I hope it's not painful to bring it up, but you are trailing the senator in the polls. What do you think you can do to turn this election around?
Well, we just right after the primary, we had already cut his lead in half. And we've seen, and others have told us, of polls of us just behind him now. So we know we have the momentum to catch up and win November 7th. What's interesting about my races is that if you look back historically in Florida, I ran against the Democrat Senate incumbent. I was down 30 points and won. I ran against the incumbent statewide for Secretary of State, down 30 points and won by 20. Jeb Bush was behind 10 points the week before his election, and he won by 10. So honestly, Michelle, we don't value those polls too terribly much, but we know we've got the momentum to move forward.
Speaking of Jeb Bush, he's one of a number of party leaders in your state who initially asked you not to run or asked you to drop out.
Initially,
what was that about?
Way back in May, they had someone else that they had hoped would run, but after qualifying and certainly after this last primary, they've gotten on board. Both Jeb Bush and the president came to Florida last week and enthusiastically asked everyone to get behind me. So we're moving forward because the point really is for the people of Florida, the issues like tax cuts to make sure that hardworking families get to keep more of their hard-earned money, to make certain that we cut this ridiculous waste, fraud, and abuse in Washington, D.C., to make sure that our borders protected, and even protecting our marriages as we know it, all those issues Bill Nelson has not been supportive of. And we have a 180-degree difference in terms of our outlook and where we would want to take the state and the nation.
But I guess I'm just wondering, how is it that happened from having been Secretary of State, from having been really the toast of the town of the Republican Party in Florida and nationally after your stint as Secretary of State, and then to have it be so many people asking you not to run? What was going on there?
No, it wasn't so many people. It was just two or three at the top.
And his name was Bush.
Everywhere else where we've gone, Michelle, there's been overwhelming support. It was a wave of support. Think about this. Even in tough Miami-Dade, in a field of four candidates, we still won with 65%. So we've moved forward, and now this is the present, and everyone is on board, and we're confident we'll win because my issues that I'm fighting for, like I said, cutting taxes on hardworking people, making sure we protect marriage, because Bill Nelson has voted against marriage between a man and a woman, not once but twice, and he's voted to give new citizens way more rights and privileges than you and I even have today.
Some say you're too polarizing to win statewide.
Floridians are really,
what would you say to that?
Where we stand.
Congresswoman, some say you're just too polarizing to win statewide. What would be your response to that?
I don't believe I'm so polarizing when you see the wave of support from Republicans, independents, and Democrats. All I've ever done is to prove that I'm going to stand for what's right, not what's popular. I'm not going to follow partisan politics. And I'm certainly not going to kowtow to liberal media and be politically correct. I'm going to fight for Floridians. And they like an independent voice that's going to fight for them. And every campaign promise I've made, I've lived up to during my term.
Now that the primaries are over, now that the primaries are over, what is your plan to appeal to the people who have voted for Bill Nelson in the past or who you'll need to put a bipartisan coalition together?
Great question. We're going to remind people of Florida what their values are, who they care to have represent them in Washington, D.C. They did not elect someone that was going to raise their taxes. They did not elect someone that cared more about giving illegals more rights and privileges than we have. They did not want to elect someone that would vote against marriage. And Bill Nelson, when he was insurance commissioner, allowed the national insurance companies to cut and run, thereby making Floridians take care of their own homeowners insurance. So now we are stuck with insurance rates going through the roof at 300%, 400%, 500%. We're going to make sure that Floridians remember his lack of leadership there as well. So when you start comparing and contrasting my voting record with Bill Nelson's, when his voting record is actually rated as more liberal, according to the National Journal, more liberal than Hillary Clinton and Charles Schumer, that's not where Floridians' values lie, not independents and Democrats either. And they know that I'm going to go to D.C. and fight for them.
Congresswoman Catherine Harris is a Republican from Florida. She is her party's Republican nominee for the U.S. Senate race, and she joined us by phone from the Washington area. Thank you so much, Congresswoman.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And Ken Rudin is still with us, our political junkie. Let's talk about some of the Senate races. Some of the other Senate races, because we started with talking about Virginia. In Pennsylvania, a judge ruled that the Green Party will not be on the ballot. This could be bad news for Republican Senator Rick Santorum. Why?
Well, actually, the Republican Party was helping finance this candidate because the Green Party candidate was pro-choice on abortion. Both Rick Santorum, the Republican incumbent, and Bob Casey Jr., the Democratic opponent, are both pro-life. And obviously, any votes that come from the left would take away from Bob Casey. Rick Santorum has been trailing in this race from day one, but in the last couple of weeks, he had been narrowing the gap. Some polls had him within five, six points, and there were some sense among some Republicans that he was going to close the gap and perhaps pull ahead. But the last poll showed Casey up by back to double digits. The loss of a third-party candidate really hurts the Santorum cause.
Let's go to New Jersey. Tom Kaine and Senator Robert Menendez are running neck and neck, but recent polls show Kaine slightly ahead of Menendez. What's your read on that?
Well, this is a remarkable thing, given the fact that the atmosphere nationwide is so anti-Bush, anti-war, and certainly pro-Democratic, the fact that in such a blue state like New Jersey, which has not elected a Democrat to the Senate since 1972, as you well remember, Michelle, Tom Kaine is leading by 5-6 points in many polls, and a lot of it has to do with either Bob Menendez coming from Hudson County, which is, there are always ethical questions about anybody who comes from Hudson County, whether Menendez or is tied to it or not, and the fact that Governor John Corzine is pretty unpopular and Democrats are taking the blow. Plus, you have the specter of a former governor, Jim McGreevy, who resigned over a gay sex affair, is walking around the state promoting his book, and Democrats are saying, why can't we shut this guy up somewhere? Because he's really hurting the cause, and I think he may be hurting Menendez's chances.
Why?
Well, because it's more Democrats. You have John Corzine fighting with the legislature. You have McGreevy embarrassing the party by going around talking about what he believes in as far as his personal life.
But he's not on the ballot. So what's
Look. George W. Bush is not on the ballot either. And yet George W. Bush, I would say, in perhaps 50 of the 50 states, is the key issue for Democrats. There are Republicans who may be very independent, but they are being linked with Bush because they have the R after their name, which is Republican.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to a caller. Let's go to Virginia Beach. And Bernard?
Yes.
Or is it Bernard?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Taking the call. I'm a black male residing in Virginia, and with regards to Allen allegedly using the N-word, I think that it's more smoke and mirrors than substantive. And I feel like the overwhelming number of people of color who were not going to vote for him or vote for him are not necessarily concerned with his use of the word as much as if they could determine if that's representative of how he feels deep down.
And what do you think? Can I ask you, how does it strike you?
Well, first of all, I'm not a Republican. Second of all, my personal preference is that I don't like the word whether someone black or white says it. Okay, I think that the word shouldn't be used, period, and I don't buy into it's okay for black folks to use the N-word and not okay for white folks. There's a scene in Demolition Man where Stallone's character uses an expletive and this device on the wall shoots out like a fine, a ticket or whatever. And I would venture to say that if those were installed in households across America, you'd probably have more people of color getting those little tickets for using the N-word. So, I mean, let's do away with the word. I'm not a Republican, so I'm not a defender of his, but I think we could stick more to the issues. The reality is that people do pay attention to the negative, and that's what causes the problem.
Okay, Bernard, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Ken, what about that? Do you think, briefly, do you think that Bernard represents kind of the core of minority opinion, that people think, oh, long time ago, it's not relevant, let's talk about the issues?
Well, not if you look at the polls. I mean, I've seen nothing that Jim Webb has done, the Democratic candidate Jim Webb has done, that made this race as close as it is. It's really either statements about George Allen or allegations about George Allen. But the caller makes an important point that it puts Allen in an untenable position because he'll say no, but journalists around the country and Democrats around the country will say, well, we don't believe you because you may have worn a flag or you may have said this, 30 years ago. So I mean, he's in a tough race. And the fact is, again, he should be winning this by 25 to 30 points. And he just seems off his game. He just doesn't know how to deal with it. I mean, how many times can you say that you're not racist? I mean, until voters, the only word they hear is the word racist, and it comes to be associated with the candidate.
Last question. Congress is about to return to their district for the midterms. What will they likely accomplish before they adjourn? And is this Congress, is whatever they do here going to play out when they go back home?
Well, Democrats have been saying for a long time this is a do-nothing Congress. There's a lot of things that President Bush had asked for, certainly an overhaul of the immigration system that's not happening. Oh, you may see a border fence, but you may not even have that. President Bush will not even get all he wanted on the war against terror, the legislation about that. So the Republican Congress does know that they will come back after the election. They'll have a lame duck session where perhaps John Bolton to the UN will be brought up. They're talking about building a fence from Mexico all the way to Lou Dobbs's house, you know, to protect everybody. But again, most this will be a week to get out of town and campaign, and the Republicans need as much campaigning time as they can get.
Just very, very briefly, because remember Catherine Harris talked about, you know, illegals having more rights than you and I do and so forth. That language, and I noticed it was very interesting, she didn't really talk about national security issues per se. Is immigration that powerful of an issue? And is the fact that Congress has failed to pass any legislation before they go home having an effect?
Well,
and if so, on whom?
It is having an effect in the fact that, look, the Republicans run the place. They should get what they want on immigration, but it is an important issue. And ultimately, I think it does help the Republican Party because the border is broken. Who do you blame? You blame the party that's in power, but the border is broken, and Republicans seem to be much stronger on this issue.
Okay. Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor. Thank you, Ken.
Thanks, Michelle.
He writes the weekly column Political Junkie and a podcast called It's All Politics. Both are available at NPR.org. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Michelle Martin in Washington. And take over this beautiful land.